एचडी स्मार्ट कास्ट।
यू आर लिसनिंग टू एन एचडी स्मार्ट कास्ट ओरिजिनल।
Welcome back to a fresh new season of Health Charcha. I am Deepti Ahuja, podcast producer, HT Smartcast, and your host and dost on this podcast, where we will discuss all of the burning health-related questions you, my dear listener, might have in mind. So, let's begin. When in doubt, listen to your heart, they say. Something that holds true till date, in my opinion. In the last episode, we spoke of aortic stenosis, a deadly disease that can affect your heart, young hearts at birth, and even old hearts similarly. We covered what AS is, how it affects our lifestyle, lifespan, its causes and symptoms. And if you haven't listened to the previous episode, I'd strongly suggest you go ahead and do that. Because hey, when it comes to scary stuff like the matters of the heart, ironically, logic kicks in, doesn't it? Anyway, in this episode, we will try and take a brave step towards finding out the tests and treatments if we or our loved ones have had the prognosis of having AS. After all, let's face it, we're still living in COVID times, and even the smallest things are, well, terrifying. So, ye to aortic stenosis hai ki nahi? To discuss with us tests and treatments of AS in this episode, we have with us Dr. Ashwin B. Mehta, HOD and Director Cardiology, Jaslok Hospital and Research Center, Mumbai. Hello, Dr. Mehta. How are you? Welcome to Health Charcha.
Hi, Deepti. I'm fine. I suppose you're good too.
Yes, absolutely. So, Dr. Mehta, you know, we'll take the bull by the horns, right? What are the kind of tests that are performed to diagnose aortic stenosis?
Okay, first of all, the history taking is the most important. You must listen to what patient has to say. And they usually describe three symptoms. A, they may have a chest pain. B, they may experience breathlessness. Or they may have episodes of blackout or fainting. Once I see this kind of symptoms in an elderly gentleman, I am on my alert. And then I begin to examine him. And some of them, Deepti, you will be surprised that some of them even can hear murmur in the heart, because sometimes the aortic stenosis murmur is very, very loud.
Ooh.
And they may even put their hand on the chest and say that I'm feeling some kind of a murmur in my hands. Therefore, they may come with these kind of symptoms. And the moment I begin his examination, the first thing is to do a general examination. And he might have a swelling of the feet. His pulse may look a little different. There is a technicality, which I do not want to go into details. He may have even irregular heartbeat. But the most important, when I put a stethoscope on his chest, I hear a very loud murmur and certain stage of the heart's beat. And it is known technically as systolic murmur. It doesn't matter. You don't have to worry about what systolic or diastolic.
Thank you.
But just for curiosity.
Yes.
And then I proceed to take ECG, 2D echo, and X-ray chest.
Right. You mentioned that it happens to people who are in their old age. Is that true, or can aortic stenosis happen to just about anybody?
Well, if you ask me that way, Deepti, there is congenital aortic stenosis also. And that kind of disease sometimes may manifest itself in a newborn period. Newborn period is defined as up to 1 month of the birth. And it could be at that time, or it may be exhibited a little later on. And importantly, in an adolescent or a young individual, it may be rheumatic aortic stenosis.
Oh.
And this is extremely common in our country, though the rheumatic fever is eradicated practically in the well-developed countries. But in our country, we do see sometimes rheumatic fever leading to aortic stenosis. But what we are mainly focusing now is the aortic stenosis, which appears in the late age due to degenerative changes. The aortic valve undergoes a structural change. It gets deteriorated due to wear and tear and aging. And that aortic stenosis is the one which I think we are going to discuss in detail.
Yes. And now that you've mentioned, we are also going to discuss congenital diseases in later episodes. But now, for aortic stenosis purposes, I'm sure there are some treatment options available for this disease. Please tell us what those treatment options are like. What do they look like? What can people avail?
Okay. The modern science offers three pathways for the treatment. One, medical treatment. Mm-hmm. Two, interventional treatment. The term interventional treatment means that you do not offer an invasive treatment like surgery, but a minimum invasion. I would not say zero invasion, but minimum invasion.
Right.
In a fully conscious state, in a state of awareness. And the third one is a surgery.
Hmm.
Of these, the medical treatment does not work. And if it all works, it's first just temporarily, and then for the relief of symptoms, and that's about all. Or achieving fitness for the subsequent procedure. Two important treatment is, one is the, what we call it, is a TAVI or transcatheter aortic valve implantation or transcatheter aortic valve replacement, TAVI or TAVR.
Right.
That is one. And that is, I'm happy to say that my very dear friend, Dr. Alain Cribier in Rouen, working in France, he started this for the first time in the whole world.
Right.
Alain Cribier. And he's a wonderful man, actually. He's now retired. And he comes to India very often because he believed in Aurobindo. So he used to visit Pondicherry. Yeah.
So what is TAVI again? Like you said, you were...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let me explain to you.
Yeah.
The valve, which is enclosed in a hollow tube called catheter, is taken through the groin right up to the aortic valve, our normal aortic valve, patient's valve.
Right.
This is done under fluoroscopic guidance. And it's a approximately 5 millimeter tube, which encloses the valve. And when we take this tube right up to the valve, we cross the valve, open up the valve with the balloon to start with, and then deposit that valve there and come out. So simple as that. No cut, no wound, no pain, no anesthesia, fully conscious patient. And that, I think, is a miraculous thing, fantastic thing. Yeah. Within about 45 minutes, a patient could be 45 minutes to about an hour and a half. A patient is back into his ICU and he can listen to his iPad or iPod, whatever it may be, or music. And this is so simple as that.
You said there are two kinds. So one is TAVI or TAVR. What is the other kind?
This TAVI is the name for the same procedure, but... In Europe, they call it TAVI. In United States, they call it TAVR. But they are synonymous.
Mm-hmm.
They are synonymous. Now comes to the third procedure, and that is surgery.
Mm.
Till 2004, when Alain Cribier did the first case, you know, Dipti, what kind of a case they gave him to do? The government gave permission to do a kind of case whose anticipated survival was only 24 hours.
Oh.
And you can imagine what kind of guts and courage Dr. Cribier must have developed so as to perform a procedure, a brand new procedure being done for the first time in human beings, and that too anticipated survival of only 24 hours. And he did it very successfully. Subsequently, of course, the treatment modality got developed so rapidly and it has become now so simple that with some training, a good cardiologist can offer TAVI to his patients quite easily. Okay, now talking to the surgery.
Yes.
Surgery is a major procedure. And I do not want people to get an impression that everything can be done by TAVR. I just want to say that some people in whom TAVR is not practical, we may have to offer surgery to them. Why not practical? Because of certain technical issues. And their surgery requires opening the chest from the middle of the chest. It's about 8 to 10 inches of incision. And like Hanumanji, the chest is spread apart. So sometimes I joke that if the patient after surgery asks me, doctor, what did you see? I say, I tell them that I saw your wife in there.
That's such a nice way to make things calmer and cooler for these guys, for all of your patients.
And then, so then that this surgery is usually about 3 to 4 hours. This is actually an open heart surgery. They have to open the heart, place the valve there, remove the old valve, stitch it. Now, by and large, since at this point of time, the tower, the valve which we put by the catheter-based treatment has a life of about 10 to 12 years. So therefore, if the patient is young in his early 40s or late 40s, and if he has an aortic stenosis, or even that way 50s also, I don't offer tower. Then I offer mechanical valve, which lasts for about 20 years or even more. Now, a young man lives longer. Elderly man requires relief for 10 years.
Right.
But the young man may live about 20 years, 25 years. So if the man is 50, then I would encourage him to undergo surgical treatment. Till we develop that kind of valve, which is offering relief for more than 20 years, then, of course, the scenario will change. But right now, surgery is the treatment. Also, it's the other way. Not everybody can be offered surgery. The surgeons themselves will refuse to operate in patients. For example, people who have undergone radiation for malignancy on the chest, they have such a dirty chest, so rigid chest, that surgeon would not be able to even open it. People who have had the previous surgeries a couple of times, then also there are so much of adhesions that the surgeon is disappointed to accept such kind of cases. Then tower becomes very handy.
Right. Makes sense.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Mehta, people are still scared of, you know, going under the knife. And no matter what time, right, whether it be pandemic or non-pandemic, sabko dar lagta hai bhai, like to go under the knife. So let me ask you, is it possible to treat valve diseases without any kind of intervention with medication alone? Is it possible?
I wish, Dipti, that was possible. I wish. But it is just not possible. This is a mechanical problem. And no medication can ever affect mechanical deformity. To give you an example, if there's a hole in the heart, it's common sense that medications cannot work. Similarly, if the doors are diseased and closed or narrowed, mechanical problem, and the medications just can't work. However, temporarily you can support the heart with medication and bring it to such optimal level so that we can offer him a tower or a surgery with the increased margin of safety.
Right. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. What happens to patients if they don't get, the treatment done or ignore the recommendations given to them by doctors? What happens to them?
Well, I'll tell you what. Once the patient is symptomatic with aortic stenosis, unfortunately, the lifespan, life expectancy is very short. To just give you an example, one who develops the heart failure, that means the one who develops breathlessness, he does not live for more than 6 months to a year. It's a bad news. But,
you know,
after all, the patient is the master of his own heart, his own health.
Yes.
So if he says, the doctor, I've lived enough, I just do not wish to live any further, and I'll accept, I don't want to undergo any procedure. I heard you loud and clear, but I wish to accept the eventuality. And then I think, of course, I support as much as I can with medication. I don't refuse, but I respect it. Which I explained to him, but then having understood, if he has decided that, well, he wants to not undergo TAVR or surgery, then I respect his wish.
I hear you. I mean, and I'm glad that, you know, there are doctors out there who are daring enough to actually listen and respect the wishes of the patient. And of course, the family members also. But, you know, this makes me understand. And I mean, I could be totally wrong and you could correct me. Okay. But this makes me realize that not only does a patient, you know, they can avoid going to a point of no return, they can also live healthier lives as well. If everything, if health, if heart is in the patient's hand, then they can do not only go to that end where they say that, okay, this is it, that's it, I don't want to do anymore. They can also go to the other end where they say that, okay, I'm going to go through that treatment and I'm also going to learn how to live a healthier life. And if we, you know, glorify bionic parts, you know, we've all been glorifying them, we've all been seeing these different kinds of designs for bionic parts, so then why not consider a simple solution for heart, right? So could you please tell me a little more about SAVR?
All right. Dipti, let me simplify. First of all, patient is admitted a couple of days prior to anticipated surgery. Huh. On the day of surgery, from previous night onwards, he is fasting. The whole procedure is done under general anesthesia, and the patient's procedure may last from anything of 3 to 4 hours. The incision is taken right from the upper end of the sternum, all throughout the sternum, by cutting the sternum way across deep down and separating the chest into two parts separately. Mm-hmm. The heart is brought onto the surface and the patient undergoes cardiopulmonary bypass. That means the patient's heart is quiet, not working, empty, and the whole circulation is taken by a machine, which is called heart-lung machine, outside. Wow. Then the patient's aorta is opened and the valve is located and surgically cut and removed. The new valve is brought, the size is measured, and the surgeon puts the new valve in position and sutures it all around by what we call it the pursing suture. Mm. After suturing, the chest is gradually, the heart is closed, the patient is taken off the bypass, patient is now slowly brought back into his own heart, back into the action, taking charge of circulation, and then the chest is closed. After that, the patient slowly regains consciousness when he comes out of anesthesia, and then he has to stay in the ICU for a period varying from 2 days to about 4 to 5 days. And he stays in the hospital for about 7 days. During this time, he has been given frequently the painkillers, the chest pain. You know, sometimes you hurt your leg somewhere with a chair or arm or a table, and how badly the bone hurts. Here you have opened up, you made two pieces out of the sternum, so it hurts a lot. Yeah. And the stitches are, I should say, the sternum is sutured by the steel wires, by the wires made up of steel. And that, I think, also hurts. And by the time patient is fully up above and active to go to his office, or even for that matter, go to his golf course, it takes anything for 4 to 8 weeks. On the contrary, the patient who undergoes TAVR could have a breakfast after 2 hours.
Yeah.
And sip his cup of coffee, listen to the music by iPod, and talk to his family, a video chat with his family members. And he stays in the ICU for a day only. The next day or the third day, he's discharged. And he may go back to his office on the day 4. So that's a big difference in the quality of treatment. And I should not say quality of treatment in that way, but that is the patient's experience.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that sounds like a lot to recover from. And I definitely want to know a little more about TAVR or TAVI. Could you please tell us a little bit more about that?
Okay. I think a very, very valid question. Very valid. We must all know that we all are finite. And I cannot make anybody to go beyond 100 years.
Of course.
No, So when the people have already crossed an anticipated life expectancy, my concentration is on the quality of life. Mm. It is quite possible that if I replace the valve and he starts playing golf, but 7, 8, 9 months down the line, he may develop prostatic cancer. Now, the benefits of the prostatic cancer, I mean, the benefits of the TAVR are wiped out, right? Because now the prognosis is decided by the prostatic cancer. So I do not guarantee the improvement in life expectancy, but I do assure him a quality of life. And believe me, the average life expectancy in our country is 67, 68 years. It may improve over the course of time, and it may become even more. But then the man who is 70, 75 knows very well that I do not have a very long period. I've traveled more than 3/4 of my journey, and therefore what I want to live is a good quality of life, enjoy my life with my family, my grandchildren, and whatnot. So many of them have that goal in their mind, and they also are aware and very, very conscious about that they do not have a long life to go, but a better life ahead of them after the treatment of aortic stenosis.
Interesting. I'm you know, now realizing that there is no correct formula, right? Like, there is no set formula for everybody.
No.
Everyone has a different condition, and at the age group that they come to you for a treatment, the treatment is decided accordingly, right? Yeah. So, for example, if there is someone who is really young, you'd rather just go for SAVR, which is the open heart surgery. If someone is, you know, probably in their old age, or they've crossed, say, 50, according to you, you definitely...
No, Dipti. Let me correct you. 50 still could be considered as young age, because
60, many of them, 70?
I would say about 65.
Okay. So if they are in their old age and they've crossed that, you know, senior citizen age group, right?
Yeah. Okay. Or anticipated life expectancy like 65, 67. And
right. So there is when you would recommend TAVR or TAVI, so that you can at least improve, if not life expectancy, the quality of life, right?
True.
Now, you know, say for example, there is a person who's middle age or whichever age. How does one make that decision for oneself? What treatment option would be the best suited for my condition? So say for example, you give all the options, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
Ultimately, they have to make the patient has to make the decision. So how do they decide that?
Well, I think that requires considerations of various factors.
Right.
Social, financial, that is economical, and also medical. Hmm. Well, let me take one more.
Sure.
At this point of time, a TAVR is an expensive treatment.
Hmm.
The valve cost could range something like 15 lakhs of rupees upwards. And not many people can afford that kind of a cost. And it's quite possible, I'm sure, that over a period of time, the cost will come down.
Hmm.
The second issue is that the surgical treatment requires many times taking blood thinners. And if the man is from such a remote place that the accurate control of blood thinner by regular blood test is not possible because he has no access to laboratory, then also I would consider to use a TAVR or even a bioprosthesis. You know, bioprosthesis is a different kind of a valve done surgically. That way, TAVR also is a bioprosthesis, which is made from animal tissues. And those kinds of valves do not require blood thinner. So that is another consideration that I have to keep in mind.
Hmm.
And the third one is the patient's age. If the patient is 75, or a patient is very fragile, and the patient is very high risk for surgery, due to a variety of reasons, the heart is very, very weak, or the patient has severe comorbidities, he has a bleeding diathesis, he has a past history of stroke, and all those things are there, then I would weigh in favor of TAVR. So this I explain, the medical background of a patient varies from patient to patient. This I explain to the patient properly. Then I take into consideration the social status of the patient, his economic capabilities and all. And then I give him a consolidated opinion.
Right. And what are some of the common tests performed before, you know, you actually give them these treatment options, or while, you know, you are considering these treatment options for the patients? I mean, just for general knowledge, just so that people know that, because dar to lagta hi hai ki, matlab dil ka mamla hai to dar to lagta hi hai. So, and sometimes, you know, just having so many tests done on you is so overwhelming, right? So what are some of the common tests which are generally performed on people before these treatment options are given?
Okay. Moment I've made a clinical diagnosis of aortic stenosis, the first thing is that I take an electrocardiogram in my own office. That tells me about so many, that tells me a lot of facts and figures about the patient's condition. And this would be, an ECG will tell you whether the left ventricle, the pumping chamber of the heart, is strong, enlarged, dilated. Two, it tells me about conduction disturbances. Conduction disturbances means the upper chambers and the lower chambers, do they contract in synchrony or not? And then after that, I do the echocardiography on the patient. The echocardiogram will tell me precisely the valve is calcified, the valve is narrowed, what is the extent, what is the opening, the size of the valve, or what is the valve's moments, and that those things. Is the valve leaking or not leaking? That also I come to know from echocardiography. Then I also check whether his carotid arteries are okay, because sometimes while doing a procedure, it should not happen that some clot gets dislodged or a plaque gets dislodged and go to the brain, and the patient comes off the table fine, but he has a stroke. That's a very, very disappointing. So I check the carotid arteries also. Then we perform certain blood tests also, like what is his kidney function? Because when we inject that contrast medium, the dye, the kidneys, the dye that we inject in the angiography is not kidney friendly. So we have to be careful about that. And also I do coronary angiography. The patient's coronary arteries also I have to know in advance. So if they require any treatment, then I plan to either treat them simultaneously with the TAVR, or I treat them before, or I treat them after. That's my clinical judgment. So these are the tests that we perform. Briefly, electrocardiography, echocardiography, X-ray chest, the blood examination, carotid ultrasound, and CT scan is the most important one, for not for surgeon, but for us, TAVR. Why? The CT is so sensitive. It tells you everything about the valve, that what size of valve I would need to use in particular patient, whether this valve will fit properly, and whether there is enough calcium to hold this valve in position. Because, you know, Dipti, we don't take stitches to this valve. The valve is stuck by its own force. So therefore, we have to know whether there is any holding that would ensure that the valve does not pop out. So all those things, that information I get by doing a CT angiography. Also, we use a large bore catheters from the groin. So I need to know the size of the groin vessels. Usually 5 millimeter is the minimum requirement for a groin vessel, because the catheters and the tubes that we use, they are big. So I need 5 millimeter. They all I find out by that. The tortuosity, because I have to travel and take the valve right up to the aorta. So all this information I get from CT angiography, CT aortography.
Wow. Dr. Mehta, you've definitely given us a lot to chew on. And I somehow get the feeling that, you know, the person who's listening or the family that is listening are definitely intrigued by the TAVI treatment. I've honestly, you know, love to pick your, I mean, I definitely want to pick your brains more. I have so many more questions, but that's all the time that we've got on this episode. But really, just the possibility of this disease affecting a loved one or oneself can be so overwhelming. And I would thank you a lot for actually understanding and empathizing and explaining things in such a simple manner. Thank you so much, Dr. Mehta.
My pleasure.
That's it for this episode on Health Charcha. If you want to know more about the diseases discussed in this podcast, please initiate a discussion with your physician. To get updates on Health Charcha, follow at HT Smartcast on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube or LinkedIn. And to listen to more such podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno Naye Nazariye Se. This is a public awareness initiative supported by Medtronic. Views expressed are independent views of Dr. Ashwin B. Mehta, intended for general information and educational purposes only. They do not constitute any medical advice. Please consult your physician for any questions or concerns you may have regarding your condition. The doctor makes no recommendations or endorsements of any products or services.
This was an HD Smartcast original.
HD Smartcast.